This is such a familiar story, isn't it? It's the prompt for necklaces and earrings depicting fish, and banners and logos and bumper stickers and cookbooks and Christian organizations. The symbol of the fish reminds us of the miracle of Jesus' multiplying a scant number of loaves and a couple of fish into enough food for 5,000 people. Sufficient food, for instance, for everyone in Shelburne. We can get pretty caught up in the weeds of this story, conjecturing that, well, maybe people weren't especially hungry, or they were particularly deferential and they didn't take enough food, and that therefore there was enough food left in the basket. In focusing on the miraculous multiplying of the food, however, we tend to rush over the part of the story that, though seemingly insignificant, just seemed especially aimed at us. After Jesus has addressed the crowd, as Alex told us, and the sun is descending in the western sky, the disciples, those in the inner circle, are tired and they're hungry and they think it's time to call it a day. They just want to put their feet up and watch their favorite show. So they quietly suggest that Jesus send the crowd off to fend for themselves, because they too are clearly hungry. And this is the part of the story that we skim over, but not today. It behooves us to consider the dynamic inherent in the disciples' appraisal of the situation at hand. They are the elite, the kitchen cabinet, Jesus' trusted inner circle, and they assume that they will have his confidences and attention while the crowds will not. They need to get down to business and figure out what will come next. They are important and they have work to do if they are going to help Jesus' message spread. Their intentions are all good. They take their roles seriously, and they genuinely seek to further Jesus' ministry. But they get it wrong, and Jesus tells them so. Why should the crowd be sent off to fend for themselves? Don't dismiss the throngs because it will slow your plans. They are the plan. And sure, it will likely be chaotic and messy, and what you had thought you wanted to do may not actually happen, but amazing things just might happen. There's also the little part about there being only 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Only 5 loaves for maybe 15 people? That's actually a lot of bread, more than they ever would have needed. But they were operating, strange though it may sound, from a position of scarcity. Maybe even unconsciously their thought, there isn't enough food. We haven't gotten enough of Jesus for us. We need more. We are entitled to more. And Jesus calls them out. They need not go away. You give them something to eat. And again, the disciples protest that they haven't got enough. I just want to say, by way of visual example, the gluten-free bread that we are having this morning at communion for 100 people was just a loaf and a half. A few weeks ago, we opened the discussion of white privilege, and you can see how this story fits in with this view. Like the disciples, we walk on a road of privilege, rarely questioning our access to it or our right to travel exactly where we would like to go. We are also inclined to think that because we presumably do not get in the way of equality and justice, that we are doing our part. But just getting out of the way is not the answer, any more than sending the crowds off to fend for themselves was the answer. What Jesus is suggesting, I think, is that it is up to us to take the responsibility for others, to clothe them, to educate them, to provide health care, jobs, housing, and food. You go get them, Jesus says, and bring them to me. and the table at which Jesus presides, whether it is this table here set before us, or a patch of sand or grass, or a small tent with neighbors cheek to jowl, or an apartment at a campground, the feast at the feet of Jesus is abundant and merciful and filled with love and compassion and forgiveness. And when you start giving these treasures away, just watch. They multiply exponentially. And there is the miracle, indeed. Grace and peace.
Good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Ebony Nyoni, and I'm the co-founder of Black Lives Matter. Before I start to explain a little bit about the organization, I had a request from Jenny, so I'm going to sing a song that she requested. I haven't had any water, so. This one?
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. And before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave. And go home to my Lord and be free. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. And before
spiritual that many of the slaves sang. I'm very spontaneous, so I just allow myself to be a mouthpiece, whether I'm at the Women's March in Mount Pillar in front of 20,000 women. I gave the spotlight to God, that there is a God, and that I'm just going to speak on behalf of God for many broken people. This is one of the prayer confession was part of it, but I love it.
Create in me a clean heart, oh God, and renew a right spirit within me. Create in me a clean heart, oh God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from thy presence, O Lord. Take not thy Holy Spirit from me. Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation, and renew a right spirit within me. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Lord, take not thy Holy Spirit from me. joy of thy salvation, and renew a right spirit within me. I was at the working for, at the time it was the Vermont Department of Education, now it's the Agency of Education, and I was a secondary education consultant and working with policy changing and secondary renewal and all of that stuff. And I just felt like it was time to go to a place, when we talk about missionaries, I raised money and built a school in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. And I think 3/4 of the students were Muslim. It's a heavily Muslim area that I was in. And it was a blessing because it wasn't only teaching the people. And secondary education in other places is about a series of exams. So it's not necessarily tied to age. And so I had a range of ages in the class. And it was just a very awesome experience. But for some reason, I was yanked back to Vermont from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. A friend of mine at Columbia University invited me to speak. They have a program there called, I think it's what the teachers' college called the Freedom School, and they wanted me to speak to them. And then it's just when I got to New York City, then I ended up, you know, Vermont. I still had the house there, and the tenants were leaving. And long story short, I spent some time in Franklin County working as a regional coordinator for youth. Long story short, I started seeing and feeling all the pain that communities of color throughout the country were experiencing, and I just connected to it. The reason why I believe in Jesus Christ is because when I was 6, I had Hodgkin's lymphoma, so I basically lived in the hospital for 2 years. At Beth Israel, it was a hospital in Manhattan, and it was a Jewish hospital, and because they checked off Christian, then I went to, they had a little Catholic ceremony upstairs in the hospital, so I did that. But I think and then my aunt used to come, and she used to take me to mosque, because half my family are Muslim. And then my cousin used to come, and she used to take me to church. And so I, you know, got both influences, and I chose Jesus because a lot of things. One, because one day when my cousin took me to church, at that time I was a little kid in a wheelchair, and they said I may not be able to walk because my bones were so like brittle and my legs were so weak. At that point, I hadn't walked in 2 years. And it was one of those like movie miracle experiences where they called me to the front at church, and I said, no, I didn't want to go. So the people in the church made a circle around me and prayed for me. And like a child, I had childlike faith. The next morning I woke up as a kid. I'm like, yay, I'm healed now. And I stepped off of my bed for the first time. I stepped on the floor, and I walked like a few steps, and then I heard my mother coming, so I jumped back in my bed because I thought she would be mad at me for walking. But and my grandma influenced me too, because she was awesome. But she didn't talk about a lot of things she did, but she used to go around to hospitals praying for people, and she was just a beautiful, beautiful woman, very quiet woman, but just very beautiful. And so that's what I want to emulate. The other thing I tell people is those Jesus movies really work. You know, around Easter time when they show like the Jesus movie, well, I was a little kid watching it, and I would bawl my eyes out, like, you know, why would they do this to someone who is so awesome and who cared so much, you know, for people. And the reason why so many people loved Jesus was because he didn't discriminate. Like, he didn't care about, like, man-made rules or this or that. He just loved on people. And that's what I do as I founded Black Lives Matter. A lot of people say, ooh, can you be Christian and found Black Lives Matter? Yes. Because there are oppressed people in this country. Oppressed people. And we need to pay attention to that. Jesus would have. And the focus is not just, do all lives matter, not just Black lives. Of course all lives matter. Of course. But all lives weren't enslaved in this country. All lives weren't put in zoos. If you do your research, there were, at a certain time, Black people, you could go to the zoo. I used to go to the Bronx Zoo with my cousins and see the giraffes and everything. And recently I started researching. And some decades before we were going, looking at the animals, they had real people at the zoo. And they were us. And even, you know, circuses. I used to love going to the circus, but I did my research, you know, like a historian. I did my research. And circuses, before they had animals, they had people of color. And, you know, some things that you won't even believe. But they used to pay, people used to pay to see Black babies fed to the alligators. That's not, you need to do your research. It's true history. It's history that you won't find in the school books because it's hard history. But I think it needs to be put in the school books so we can learn from our mistakes. There's just, when it comes to Black and brown people in the prison systems, there's like disparities and, oh, they must have a tendency to do bad things. No. We're all humans, we all have the same blood. It's just that some people have prejudices. We all have prejudices, but there's only some people who have the power to implement their prejudices. And so if you already think Black people are in gangs, Black people are this, and you're sitting as a judge, this person stole a candy bar. 20 years in jail, you know. This white person took a car on a joyride. You know, let's give him community service. I've seen it personally because I worked as a social worker for many years, over 15 years, through Howard Services, through Northwest Counseling and Support, working with youth. I've seen it, the disparity. So it's not us trying to separate. As Black Lives Matter, we're not trying to separate. Actually, there's more white members in Black Lives Matter than Black members. But what we're trying to do is educate, reconcile, because it's hard to for Black and brown people to forgive if the person hasn't asked for forgiveness. And so that needs to happen. Like, that reconciliation needs to happen. And then we can go forward together. But until that happens, it's hard. I mean, there's still innocent people being shot. I mean, the Philando case where the Black man had his daughter in the back seat, and he said, I have, you know, papers for I have a gun, but I have papers for it. And he, as he went to pull out the paperwork, or I think it was in the glove compartment, the cop just shot. And he went through trial and stuff, but he was free. And that's kind of the legacy. No, like, justice. So there's oppressed, hurting people. There's systems put into place to, you know, keep certain people, groups down. And it's just not talk. I beg of you, because there's the internet now, I beg of you to do your research, like about the babies being fed to the alligators. That's true. That's true. And it's not just in the past, it's happening in the, there's still lynchings going on recently. There were two lynchings, one in Texas and one in Mississippi, like old fashioned lynchings where they tie them in a tree. Recently, one of the, he was a confirmed KKK member, he passed away, and they found like 9 bodies underneath his house, black men. So I'm not here to horrify you. I'm here to connect with you. That I love you, but I don't feel always love from you. You know? So I'm here to connect and say that although our experiences are different, we're still all human beings, right? And if you do believe in God, because that's where I'm coming from, even if I wasn't black, I'd still be here advocating. You know, before I was doing this, advocating in Vermont for oppressed people groups, I was planning on going to Cameroon to build safe spaces for the young ladies in Nigeria who were kidnapped by Boko Haram. So there's a lot going on in the world, but we need to start here first. A lot of us go as missionaries to other places, right? To Africa, to Asia. But what are we doing here to reconcile here? It's easy to go overseas and be, you know, the angel of light, but what are we doing in our own country, in our own hometowns? Are we purposefully going out into communities of color or getting connected with organizations of color so that maybe we can invite them here? This is a beautiful, beautiful church, and it was a well-done service, beautiful service. I would want to come here if I had a vehicle. I'm kind of in between. My lease was up, so I don't have a vehicle. So when you talk about bread, loaves of bread, if anyone has any suggestions on a used vehicle or something for me, I would come here more often. It's beautiful. And I would bring my 4-year-old niece. It's beautiful because the children are the future, you know. They need to be exposed and be able to have friendships with other kids of color. So that's what I wanted to say, is that what we need in Black Lives Matter is we have, our goal is 10% of Vermonters saying we support black lives. That's all. Just go to the website and sign up as a member and participate if you can. Volunteer. We have Shop for Change where a lot of local artists donate things. And we have a little coffee shop. And we have reading groups for the little kids and things for people to be able to come and feel safe. There's a lot of stories from a lot of people, but I don't want to be here and just keep shocking you. Like, you know, the fact in Milton, I was just with the family, and the young girl, she's 12 years old, and she attends Milton Middle School, and they spat on her, a young girl, because she answered a math question correctly, and the other girl didn't, so she spit on her. And she went to the teacher with the spit still on her cheek, and the teacher said, oh, you're making a big deal out of it. She was just playing or something. This same girl has been called the N-word. And so we're working with the school districts. But like I said, there's story after story. So if you really say you love Jesus, that's my thing with Christianity. You know, we say we love Jesus, but we stay in our separate communities, you know? And we just make our own bubble worlds. And we come to church neatly and nicely, and oh, that was a nice service. We go home and have our own lives. But Jesus was radical. You guys have to be radical, no matter what age you are. I love you all. Moses was older, but he did what he did. So start get radical, even if you lived 80 plus years of your life being, you know, status quo. Jesus was radical. Like, he wasn't conservative at all. I don't know where we get that notion that Christians are conservatives, because Jesus was radical, really radical, and he loved. And so when I get to the question of, you know, with either homosexuality or this or that, let God be the judge. But he said, I command you to love. We need to love people, all marginalized people. Just love them. And that's peaceful, because we don't have to try to do this or that. And by having relationships, you know, we're warming them up. We're loving them, and they're loving us and starting to get used to us. But don't separate yourselves from just, like, what you perceive as all people bad or all things evil. Like, love on them. God said that's his greatest command. And I feel good knowing that, like, when I interact with all kinds of people, that all my duties is to love and to provide for those people who are suffering. So